Good morning. My name is Ann Wheelton, and I'm here with Ann Lumley Davis at her beautiful home at 3600 Main Street on Shingetig Island. And I'm here to interview Ann for the Shingetig Island Library Oral History Project. And I've been looking forward to this interview because I know it's going to be wonderful. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Ann.
How are you today?
I'm fine.
Good. I thank you, first of all, for even allowing me to do this for the Oral History Project.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. I'm going to start out by asking you, Ann, where and when you were born.
Well, you're going to be surprised at this because you think I'm a Shingetigger, but I'm a Philadelphian. No, my parents lived in Philadelphia for 13 years. My dad worked for Philadelphia Electric. And I was born in Philadelphia in the Women's Medical College Hospital in East Falls. And shortly after I was born, about a year and a half or so, my father lost his job because it was in the middle of the Depression. I was born on May 26, 1931. And Dad and Mother decided they would move back to Shingetig. So they did. And here they brought me, and I've stayed ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the Depression, when was the beginning of
well,
it? 1928?
Yeah, I was born in 31, so.
Okay.
He was able to get through about 3 or 4 years, but then he was laid off like thousands of others were.
Wow, that must have been a
rough time.
Yes. Now, your dad was a Shingetigger.
No, my mother.
Your mother was a Shingetigger.
My mother was a Bunting, and my grandfather, Bunnies, or my great-grandfather Bunning, started the William C. Bunning oyster business.
Okay.
And when my great-grandfather died, it was left to his son, William. And then when he died, it was left to his son, my Uncle Bill Bunning.
Okay.
And my mother was one of five children. And my grandfather, I guess I'll tell you, make it a little spicy here.
Yeah, give me lots of stories.
Okay. Well, my grandfather, he was quite a character. A very honest man, a wonderful businessman. But he liked women, and he liked his bottles. Mm-hmm. And he had girlfriends on the side. So when my mother was only 2 years old, he left home and went with the lady that used to sew for my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
She lived down the street here, and so at night, when it would get dark in the winter rather quickly, she would tell my grandfather, she'd say, "Will, you walk Mary home. It's too dark for her to be out." Well, he kindly liked Miss Mary, and so one day he just didn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
And now he provided for his family. I will say that. Of course, back in those days, he provided her with her beets and vegetables, barrels of potatoes and things like that. And she raised chickens. They all had chicken yards back in those days.
Uh-huh.
And he provided with meat and, of course, all the seafood she wanted. And he gave her $5 a week.
Wow.
We're talking about 1897.
Okay.
Because my mother always said she was only 2 years old.
Okay.
And he later bought the D.J. Wilton house up on the corner of Church and Main Street,
right,
which has been torn down.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I think he gave $22,000 for it. And I think Mr. Wilton made the remark that he would never pay for it. So my grandfather, he says, "I'll pay for it, and everybody will know it when it's paid for."
Oh, my.
So I think it was $22,000. I believe that's what my mother said.
Wow.
So the day...
Tell you about that house. Can you describe that house?
Oh, my. It was a big Victorian house. It had 22 rooms, had marble fireplaces, and a beautiful staircase, real wide stairs. And they were walnut or mahogany.
Wow.
And a real dark wood. And it was a gorgeous home. It's a shame it was ever torn down.
It was all these people, my husband,
oh, yes,
people that owned it. And you're the first person who I've heard say anything about the inside. So anything you can remember about
yes,
the inside.
Well, when See, it was left her lifetime, his wife. It was left to her lifetime.
Okay.
She lived until 1951, I believe.
Okay.
And when she died, it reverted back to the five children. Well, all of them had their own homes, and they just didn't want the house.
Okay.
So it was sold to Mr. Kellum. He was the gas man, or oil man on the shore here.
Okay.
And he bought it for $15,000.
Wow.
And each child got $3,000 apiece. But that was a shame.
Wow.
Because it had a brick stable in the back. And I overheard my mother say that years ago, my grandfather would come down in his horse and buggy, and it was a black stallion he had. And she said it was a beautiful horse. And he would come down, and he would call my grandmother out to the fence to talk to her.
Uh-huh.
He didn't come in to the door, but he always called her if he had something to discuss.
Right, your grandfather owned it. Your grandmother lived there, and your grandfather lived someplace else. And he just
see, the house over here, right beside me, was their home.
Right, okay.
And when he left her, she's in this house.
Right.
And his new wife and he were in the house up town.
Oh, okay. His new, all right. So
yeah.
They went moved on.
Oh, they went uptown.
Okay, I got
and
you.
Left my grandmother down to Marsh here,
okay.
Which is what we call this section of the island.
Okay, good.
So anyway, but the kids, they all did well. I would say that, even though they didn't have their father's love.
Uh-huh.
But I've always heard my mother say that he was really good to them. I mean, whenever he saw them in town, you know, and all, he'd always give them money, you know, things like that. So he never really forsook them. He was there to back them.
Uh-huh.
So, let's see. What else would you like me to say?
All right. What was life growing up here? What was it like for you? Tell me about your childhood days.
Well, I was the only child, of course, my mother and dad had. So I was always looking for somebody to play with, you know. And there was a little girl down the street, her name was Minerva. And I was crazy about Minerva. And she was a tomboy and a roughneck as she could be. I never could go barefooted. And Minerva had the toughest feet. She would come up here and she could walk into shells and all. And me, I was kind of tiptoeing along, you know.
You were tenderfoot.
Oh, yeah, I was a tenderfoot. But anyway, and then in the spring when the boys would have their marbles out here, it used to have an old store across the street here.
Okay, what was the name of that store, do you remember?
No, because it was empty most of my lifetime, you know. Well, at one time, Willie Bain down the street here had it. But it was mostly empty. It did have some apartment in the back, and that would be rented to people.
Okay.
And I know it was a Coast Guard family. Names were Aloe. And that's the first place they live, and they come to Shigerton.
Louise Aloe?
Mrs. Aloe.
Louise Aloe?
Yes.
Oh, I know.
And her family.
Oh,
yeah.
Priscilla.
Well, see, Priscilla was one of my dearest friends.
Uh-huh.
And they built the house over here on Bunning Road.
Right, uh-huh.
But they lived over there. But I would get out in the spring of the year when they would have marbles. And mine would buy me I'd get my marbles on a Saturday. And I'd get a bag, and I overthink the cost of a nickel or a dime for a bag of marbles. Pretty kind. And I would get out there and play marbles with the boys and lose every marble I had. But we had good times when we were little. In the summertime, we'd sit out on the front steps or go next door and sit on that front porch, and we would tell ghost stories and play games, hide and seek, and tag, and all like that at night, you know.
Right.
We always had good times. And then when I got older, when I was in high school and all, we formed a Bobby Sock Club. And that's the girls of my girlfriends,
uh-huh.
Sue Leonard and Joan Jester, Nancy Conklin,
uh-huh.
And all of us, we had a Bobby Sock Club. And we wore our father's white shirts, and we had dungarees and Bobby Socks and you call it black and white shoes, saddle oxfords. And every Friday night we'd meet, and most times we would have a sleepover on Friday nights.
Uh-huh.
We'd go from one house to the other, and we were very close, very close. And That was one of the things. And in school, we had a dramatic club, and I was in that. We had the Tri High Y.
Uh-huh.
I was in that. We had a lot of things going at that time.
Uh-huh.
And we had a lot of things and time to do, too.
Yeah, what was it like in those days?
Well, we had a bowling alley in time. Right across from, well, the buildings have all been torn down now. But it was right across where the medical center is, in there.
Okay.
And
medical center.
And Mr. John Porter had a little restaurant.
Okay, 175 and Main Street. Okay.
Yeah, well, it wasn't on the corner of that because Miss Jenny Johnson at one time had a pub or a tavern.
Okay.
And then it was the barber shop. And this sat alongside the barber shop. But anyway, it wasn't a big bowling alley. But of course, now Pony Pines had bowling alleys. But of course, we couldn't go there. We were just kids, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, and then the American Legion had just opened. They had just opened practically when I was in high school. It was a garage at one time, the Leonard's Garage.
Uh-huh.
And after school, they had a jukebox, and they would let all the kids come there, and we could dance, and we could get Cokes. It was closed, you know. It was no beer or anything like that sold then.
Right.
In fact, I don't even think they had an alcohol license at that time. I'm almost sure they didn't. But anyway, we would go there, we could dance, we could jitterbug and do this.
That's fantastic, because there was a lot for the kids to do.
Yeah. And a lot of times we had our proms there, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we had, I know two of the proms I went to were held there.
Okay, they were held at the
Legion Hall.
Oh, the Legion Hall.
So, and we had a place in town called Louise Johnson had a restaurant there, right on the corner. It's where that little park is now.
Okay.
It was next to
the t-shirt shop and...
Well, no, it's right on the corner, right where the park is. Not the big park we got now, but the little corner park.
Right, Meatlands.
Right beside the...
Yeah.
Yeah, right beside the t-shirts.
Right. Yeah, right.
And all of us kids, we always congregated after school there.
Okay.
We would go down there and have ice cream or whatever we wanted, Coke. And we would always meet there before we went to the movies.
Uh-huh.
At one time, we had three movies on here. We had the Powell Theater, where the little mini mall is now.
Right.
Then we had what they called the New Theater. And that was built, in the 40s. But it seemed like, I don't really know what happened to it, but it was torn down.
Okay.
And it wasn't old. It wasn't an old building when it was torn down. But I don't know whether the 62 flood got it, or I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Because I just can't remember.
Okay.
But we had three movies.
And we had Roxy too, right?
Yeah. Okay. So it was called the Island Theater then.
Okay.
So, We had movies all the time going on, you know.
Uh-huh.
Something different.
Right, because you didn't have the beach, right?
We didn't have a beach.
That was on the island.
The only way we could get to the beach was like my cousin Olga and Bill. They would take us over to the beach, maybe on a Sunday afternoon. We'd go over and take our dinner or something.
Uh-huh.
But that would be the only way we'd go because we didn't have a boat. My father never did have a boat.
Okay.
Because he had come from New Mexico. They didn't have boats where he was. But,
how did your father and your mother meet anyway?
Okay. They met in World War I. My father was in the Navy.
Okay.
And he was stationed at Norfolk. And the Coast Guard station on Assateague, they did not have any radio men.
Okay.
So, somehow the government furnished four Navy men, and my daddy happened to be one of them.
Uh-huh.
And they came up here, and they stayed at the Coast Guard station.
Okay.
And my mother, there was a birthday party being given for a friend of hers, and she was dating one of these the Navy fellas. And so... he brought my father ashore with him, you know, when he came.
Uh-huh.
So they all came down to see the birthday party. It was down here at my mother's, my grandmother's next door here.
Uh-huh.
And my mother at that time was going with a man by the name of Mr. John Beebe, and he was crazy about my mother. And I find out later, I think my mother was with a lot of hearts.
Oh. Was she real cheerful like you and fun?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I didn't look like my mother. I looked like my father. But she had the most beautiful blue eyes, and I used to say, Mom, why don't you get me them blue eyes instead? She said, well, Anne, I couldn't help that. But her eyes were big as quarters. Oh, golly, they were pretty. Well, anyway, they all came to the party. And when 10 o'clock came, my grandmother would throw everybody out of the house.
Uh-huh.
You could do the state no longer than 10 o'clock over there. Well, Mom's boyfriend, Mr. John, he was over there. It came 10 o'clock, and he said, Hazel, you better get them sailors out of this house. He says, Miss Annie's going to be down here. So he left. And my father would stay a little longer, but then I think later, she did holler from upstairs and tell him to get out.
Uh-huh.
It was past their time. So that's how they met. And my mother said that she invited him for Sunday dinner the following Sunday. So anyway, my grandmother was fixing the dinner, and she was a fussing, and she says, Hazel, you didn't know a thing about that fella, where he comes from, or anything about him. She said, you invited him here, and he's not even showed up. Said, he's late.
Uh-huh.
Well, my father was standing outside the door listening to all of this. And of all things they had, she had the usual chickadee Sunday dinner. Chicken and dumplings. Chicken and dumplings. And she had turnip greens.
Uh-huh.
Well, my father had never seen a dumpling before in his life, and he'd never seen a turnip green.
Uh-huh.
And wouldn't you know, when they passed the turnip greens right, he asked Mother what it was. And she said, they're turnip greens. So he took out a little spoonful, put on his plate. And wouldn't you know that right there on the top of those turnip greens was a little worm.
Oh, my land.
It was the spring of the year, and the turnip, you know,
uh-huh.
You could easily get the worms.
Oh, sure.
Well, my grandmother almost had a fit. So the daddy says, Hazel, what is this? Well, as soon as she saw that worm, she says, that's a worm. He said, a what? She said, it's a worm.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my Lord. So he never had another turnip green.
Oh, my goodness.
He wasn't struck on. He never did like chicken.
Uh-huh.
He was a Westerner, and he liked his beef.
Uh-huh.
He liked lamb. He liked pork. But he liked turkey, but he didn't like chicken.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So, and that was another thing. Mother tried to get the, like, chili, you know. We didn't make that much on here.
Right.
Well, no, we didn't at all, uh-huh. Not in them days. But she would get it in the can for him.
Uh-huh.
And she could also get tamales, you know,
uh-huh.
in the can.
Uh-huh.
So they were the only two things that he got from, like, Southwestern,
right, uh-huh.
You know, cooking.
Uh-huh.
But we would have that for him, especially. And I had a great father. He was so smart. They were 36 when I was born.
Right, okay.
So, when I got in high school, I had one book that conquered me. Oh, I hated math with a passion. That is geometry and algebra.
Right.
Those.
Uh-huh.
I never went no further geometry. If it had calculus, God knows what I would have done. But my father would sit here nights, and he'd listen to me. I'd be sitting up here. This dining room table has always been my office
uh-huh.
back then. That's where I did all my homework, though.
Uh-huh.
And I would be fussing. I was working on problems that I couldn't get it. I've seen, we used to have it lay on the couch right here under these two windows.
Uh-huh.
And he would listen to it. And finally, he would get up. Couldn't stand it no longer. He said, I ain't let me have your book. Well, he took that book, and he had not seen a problem in about 20 years.
Wow.
He hadn't seen an algebra problem.
He can remember.
And he sat there, worked that problem out, and he looked at me, he says, algebra's pretty. And I said, pretty? He said, yes, it's finding the unknown. He says, now I want you to sit here, and he says, you take this book and go word by word, and he says, you can get that. And he would, you know, he'd try to show me, you know. Well, I would work on it and work on it. Finally, I would get it.
Uh-huh.
But he wouldn't tell me. But he could work them just those problems just like it had been yesterday.
Oh, that's so neat.
So somebody like him, they really got it when they got it.
Uh-huh.
And he was an excellent student because he had all A's when he was in school. I've got up one of his report cards upstairs, if I could find it.
That's so neat.
But I said it was a shame a brain like he had to be wasted because he would have made a wonderful engineer.
Uh-huh.
He really would have.
Uh-huh. Now, did he work at the base, or what did he do when he came here?
When they came back to Chicoutimi, he didn't do a thing like he was, you know, he was an electrician.
Oh, okay.
He was another Elvis.
I didn't know that.
He was an electrician in the mines.
Okay.
And and he worked in Philadelphia with on the generators,
okay.
The big generators.
So
when he come here, he didn't know what he was going to do.
Right, because the town
is
good for here.
He tried to go out to the cove with Uncle Bill. Uncle Bill said he'd do him a job.
Right.
Dave says, I don't think I can do that.
Uh-huh.
Well, he didn't. He would bring up the oysters and the tongs, you know. He'd have maybe one oyster. All the rest of it would have.
And, I know how it feels.
So what did he do? They lived over next door in the other house over here.
Uh-huh.
And we had company from Philadelphia to come down. And they didn't have nothing. Mom had made, they had straw blackberries had come out, you know.
Uh-huh.
She'd been to pick blackberries and made a blackberry cobbler. That's blackberries with dumplings, you know, where
right.
She'd roll out her dumplings.
Uh-huh.
And boil the blackberries off. Uh-huh. They were good.
I heard blackberries were good.
And so that's what the company and that's what we were having for our lunch. And a knock came to the door. It was Gus Palmer. Gus had the sugar cake baker. He was a German baker.
Okay.
And,
do you remember anything about the bakery after?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Because I haven't been able to find anybody about that either.
Yeah. Oh, that would drive you crazy going with that because the smell was... Yeah, me. But he asked my father if he could drive a truck. He said, yes, I can drive a truck. He says, well, you've got a job if you want it. He says, now this would be down the canyon.
Okay.
So Daddy started driving the bread truck.
Okay.
He got $15 a week.
Wow.
He would leave home here about 4:30, 5 o'clock, and get home about 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow, that's a long day.
He had roots up in Maryland. Some of them were up there. Some of them were down the canyon.
Uh-huh.
He used to go over to Saxes and all those back roads. There used to be little stores everywhere.
Okay.
Well, here we had about 20 at one time.
I know. You had them each neighborhood?
We had, yeah.
Each little park.
Your neighborhood stores.
Uh-huh. So what was the bakery like? Well, I got you on the bakery.
The bakery was... It was pretty big. It was over where Joshua has his shop.
Okay, so...
But that was the house part where Josh is.
Uh-huh.
The house was set in the front, and you walk right through the back door into this big room, you know, and the ovens. You could see the ovens. If you look close, you could see these places up in the bricks in the back there.
Okay.
There's only about one or two. They were the ovens.
Okay. And you're still there. That brick and stuff is still
there. Yeah, the brick is still there.
Yeah.
It's only, I think, that one wall.
Right.
I think.
Uh-huh.
But anyway.
So was it a big operation then?
Oh, yeah. They had five or six trucks on the road.
Okay.
Nancy Conkin's father drove a truck.
Okay.
They had a fellow by the name of Cheesy Bell. He was another truck driver.
Uh-huh.
My daddy. And, golly, I can't think, Ann. But it was a big business, and their bread was delicious. And back in those days, a lot of the other bakeries, like Firehoppers and those, they would have holes in their bread, you know. But they had it was really tight, you know,
uh-huh.
Their bread,
uh-huh.
And not any holes.
Okay.
And it was called Sweet Daisy bread.
How about that? What was it made
back?
Huh? Do you remember it was just made like regular bread otherwise?
Yeah.
Okay.
They made a raisin bread.
Okay.
I don't remember a whole wheat bread though. It was supposed to just white and raisin.
Did they have
and they had cakes. And I could see how they used to take a piece of the wax. It was like wax paper that you were, in fact we got a roll, it's still out in the garage.
Uh-huh.
That a chemical got spilled on it and Daddy brought it home, made him a roller to put it on the side of the garage.
Uh-huh.
And he used to use that for to wrap his paintbrushes in or anything you want.
Uh-huh.
I've still got it right there. And that's 50 years old.
Oh, my.
It falls pieces down.
So was Gus Palmer, was he from around here?
Right. He was from Germany.
He was?
And he married Nancy Conklin's aunt.
Okay.
Aunt.
Uh-huh.
And he gave everybody in the family a job. Nancy's father and her uncles and all. Some of them baked. Some of them drove the truck.
Uh-huh.
They all had different jobs, you know. But he was very good to them.
And he sold cakes and sweet rolls?
He sold cakes, pies. And I was like, sweet roll, what'd you get at an ordinary bakery?
Wow. How about that?
Yeah, but they could decorate cakes.
How much was a loaf of bread then?
It was about 5 or 6 cents, was it?
Five
Something like that.
Cents?
I don't think it was much more than that.
How about that? Wow.
I know it went over 10 cents.
Uh-huh. I've been smelled so good when I go
away. It would drive you nuts, you know. And that, what you, I used to go up there, you know, with Daddy at night. Sometimes he'd go up at night and do something. And after we just got killed, he was killed in a truck accident. And as soon as was up in Delaware, he was taking lumber or something up there. Well, he had sold it. They had torn down the casino, which was on the east side of the island where Pony Pines is, right beside it. Well, they called it the casino. It was just a dance place. And they had bowling alleys, too.
Okay.
It wasn't there very long.
Okay.
And he sold it, the wood timber for it. And he was taking that up in Delaware. He ran behind a truck hauling logs. Uh-huh. He was crushed to death.
Oh, my.
But he was the nicest man.
Uh-huh.
He went through a lot during World War II because, see, he was German and he had come here. And people, well, sometimes people on here could be very ignorant. And it's a shame uh-huh. because he was just as a good American as anybody here, because that's why he had left over there.
Right, uh-huh.
To get out of the persecution all that we're going through.
Wow. So was he Jewish then, or no?
No.
Okay.
No, he wasn't Jewish.
Okay.
But, and he really went through because they would mark swastikas on the trucks and all. Well, that's a shame.
That is a shame.
But I would go up there, they used to have the bread down from it. It was rising, you know.
Uh-huh.
I used to say it looked like coffins, or it looked like troughs what the animals would drink out of, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's the shape of it,
uh-huh.
you know. And, I got the smell of that yeast and all. Ugh, drive you nuts.
Wow.
And when they were making the cinnamon buns, oh, my. That cinnamon and raisins and all.
I love that smell.
Yeah,
it is. Good. Now, what happened to you after you went through high school? I also know that you were a big singer.
Oh, my.
I played the piano, too. How did you?
Oh, honey, I started taking lessons 50 cents a piece, 50 cents a week. My first teacher was Miss Marion Biden, and she lived at the last house down the island,
okay.
where Betty Mullins lives
okay.
now.
I know where that is. Uh-huh.
I used to get on my bicycle on a Saturday morning with my music book, with my 50 cents, and down the road I'd go.
How old were you when you started?
I wasn't very old, like 7 or 8. And my mother used to, I didn't have a piano, but finally, Mom, we went to Salisbury one day. This was during the war.
Okay, World War II?
No,
right.
Well, it was before World War II.
Okay.
I was about 7 or 8, so I was born in 31. It's about 1938, I'd say, or 39.
Okay.
Started. So we went to Salisbury, and we went to Tommy Young's. That was, he sold pianos.
Uh-huh.
And, they really must have been hard times for him, too, because he really wanted to get rid of his pianos. And Mother was looking at this little piano that you see over here. And she said, how much is that piano? And it was around $300. So she says, he said, Miss Lemon, would you like that piano? She says, oh, no. She says, I just wanted to find out how much they were.
Mm-hmm.
So we came home, and oh, Bundy Barty, the piano truck drove up to the front of the house, and the man came to the door, and Moses says, you've got a piano on there? He says, yeah. She says, I didn't order no piano. She says, we were just looking at him.
Uh-huh.
He said, Mr. Young wanted me to bring this here. And he says, he would talk to you about the price. So Mother says, well, I don't have a phone. So he said, well, would you be willing to pay $250 for the piano? Mother says, no, I can't go that much.
Uh-huh.
So he went down to the store and called the company from down there. And he came back and he says, Mr. Young said you could have the piano for $225. Mother says, I can't buy the piano. So he said, well, do you have a price that you could pay? You think?
Right.
So she says, I maybe $200, I could swing that. So he goes down the store, he comes back, and he says, you've got the piano.
Wow.
So I got my piano, but I still got it.
What a blessing.
So anyway.
Well, I knew you sang in the choir, too.
Yeah, but I was in first grade. When I was in first grade, I was singing all the time. And I was Martha Ray one time, and my teacher made me an orange suit. I can see that suit now, like a regular suit, and it had a wide belt, my orange. Can you picture that orange color? And me, I was always chubby, see?
Uh-huh.
I was chubby then. And this teacher took one of her evening gowns she had in college. It was Brian. I could see that in this dress. But anyway, I thought it was beautiful. She made me a long dress out of one of her formals. And we were always at play. There was something going on at school all the time. And I got up on stage when I was Martha Ray, and they told me I had to keep my mouth open. She had a big mouth.
I remember.
And I was singing, "Mama, oh mama, that man is here again, that moon is here again, and I'm just a girly man." I would flip around, you know. But I think my favorite song was, I know, that's what everybody would say, "Ann, do you still sing it?"
Okay, I'm here with Miss Ann Davis, and we're on the second half of our interview. Ann, you were saying that you were dressed up like Martha Ray, and you sang a song for me. Now, you said there was another song that everyone asked you to sing.
Yeah, that was "The Old Apple Tree in the Orchard."
Okay, how's that go?
And "There's an old apple tree in the orchard, lives in my memory, cause it reminds me of my pappy, who was handsome, young, and happy when he planted the old apple tree."
Oh.
Then one day, pappy took Winter Norton out on a jamboree, and when he brought her home, his son up, Brother Norton raised his gun up, and he chased pappy up in the tree. And it's a cute story, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's all well, anyway.
What's the next part? I want to hear it.
He said, "Say goodbye, say goodbye, say goodbye to the old apple tree. If my pappy had known it, he'd have never had a grown it, cause he died on the old apple tree." They put the apples in a basket, chopped the tree down for a casket, and that poor pappy's gone with the tree. Anyway, Ann, when I had my 50th high school reunion,
uh-huh,
I never did have the music to the song. And the woman died that had the music, and I never could get it from her husband. I asked him two or three times. He said it was in the attic.
Uh-huh.
And then he told me the story that it was when the star, the water got it. And I knew the word was true, but anyway. I got my sheet music from somewhere out in Iowa.
Uh-huh.
In the country magazine that they have.
Uh-huh.
They have a page, "Can you help me?" And it's, they ask for music, you know, anything.
Uh-huh, right.
So I put it in there. Well, and I even got a tape player from a guy in Texas. And he sang it to me, played his guitar. I call it Tex. Well, I got so tickled, I got the nicest letters from people. And they knew what I was talking about.
Uh-huh.
But this woman sent me the music. I was tickled to death to get that sheet music.
Oh, that is so neat.
Yeah. So, Jackie and I sang it at our 50th class reunion.
Uh-huh.
We sang it together. And we had a real close class. My goodness.
You must have had a fantastic
We were in class. First grade together all through school. And I guess it was about 35 of us that started out.
Uh-huh.
But when we graduated, we had 22.
Wow.
And of the 22, we had got, I think, 16 left.
That's still good.
And,
that's very good.
We're due for another reunion in 2008.
Uh-huh.
So.
Now tell me about what happened after high school. Where did you go?
Well, I went away to Goldie Beacon College. It wasn't Goldie Beacon then.
Right.
It was Goldie College at Beacon College.
Uh-huh.
And I went to Goldie.
You went there too.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I went to Goldie. It was on the corner of 9th and Tattnall Street.
Uh-huh.
Now, Beacon had a regular school building. And I used to ride back and forth to school with a fellow in Pocahontas by the name of A.D. Merle.
Okay.
We had the best times.
Yeah, Merle, Wolf? Yeah.
Well, yeah, his father had a grocery store over there.
Okay.
We were all in that family, all Merles and all. And I had a great time at school. I could write a book on going away to college. Because our house mother, they didn't check her IQ too good. Because her mother had been a house mother for them.
Uh-huh.
So they figured, well, Bernie was as good and nice a woman as her mother. But
uh-huh.
Bernie wasn't.
Uh-huh.
Bernie had all these boyfriends. She had some in Baltimore. She had, and we had one that was, he was an Italian fella. And he had a gas station. And Esther Merrick, Esther Cutler. Anyway, we were in school together up there.
Okay.
And we were good friends, Esther and her sister Louise.
Uh-huh.
We dated together and all. But anyway, we were at school up there together. Well, Esther and I turned out to be the house mother. We had been there 2 weeks before Thursday started going out on these dates.
Uh-huh.
She had the nicest husband. He was worked for the B&O Railroad. He would go to Baltimore every night, work all night, mm-hmm. and then come back in the morning early. She would have these boyfriends, and Al, for one, the Italian guy with the gas station, he had a beautiful, big Cadillac convertible car. And he would come around, pick her up, they would off they'd go. She'd get home, I don't know, in the early morning hours. One night she went with this old man that she knew in Baltimore and came back on the same train that her husband came back on. And the only reason how she got home before Pat, she took a cab, hit around the concrete pillars in the railroad station,
uh-huh.
and when she saw him get on the bus, she grabs a cab and gets there.
So we
had a time. Well, the school started the investigation,
mm-hmm.
but I never did get called in. They called me, but I had left school on my way home, so I never did get to testify.
Did you come home every weekend?
Every weekend I come home.
And and you went with somebody else, so you didn't.
Yeah.
Die.
No.
Okay. How?
We came, and sometimes we just come on the bus.
Okay.
And that cost $2, and it was under $2.50 to come from Wilmington Tuesday.
Wow.
Of course, you gas back in the days.
Right,
it was like five gallons for a dollar.
Yeah.
And, I came on weekends.
So did you get your degree in 2 years?
Yeah.
Okay, when you came home, what did you do with that?
No, I didn't get a degree. I just got me a diploma for secretarial, so I get me a job over the base. That's what I wanted to do. See, I had taken an academic course in school.
Right.
The only one in my class took that. And so I went over there and got me a job.
So when did the base been here for a while?
Oh, yeah, the base came here during the war.
During World War II?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And this was 1950 when I went to work over there.
Okay. So they haven't been to that
one? No.
All right, so you went over there?
And I worked over there until I retired in 1987.
Wow.
When the base closed, I'll never forget that day. I was one of the last ones that left that base because I wrote the last letter for the personnel department. We were all over in supply. That's where everybody wound up that was left, you know.
Uh-huh.
And when I came back for the flag ceremony, well, that's up. I'll never tell you about that. We were standing, it was a big crowd of us standing on the left-hand side of the walkway going into the administration building.
Okay, now you said the base, what part of the base, who were you
This was the naval base.
The naval base.
Yeah. Yeah. And the captain came out, and the Marines went over, and they took the flag down.
Uh-huh.
They folded the flag up and presented it to the captain. And he, in turn, gave it to Mr. Krieger. He was the director of NASA.
Okay.
They were standing, like, on the right-hand side of the walkway. Well, it never hit me until just then. I didn't have a job. It just never struck me, you know. And when I saw them, that fly, it reminded me of what they say Judgment Day is going to be like. That the sheep's going to be on the right hand, and the goats is going to be on the left.
Right.
And when I looked at us, I was like, oh, my, we're a goat. I busted right out crying.
Oh.
And Barbara Hudson, bless her heart, one of the dearest people I ever worked for, she said, Anne, what are you doing crying? And all of a sudden, she broke down and cried. We had whole side crying.
Oh.
Oh, man. But I went back to the office to get my things, and this one of the fellows that worked the personnel, he was struggling with typing this letter, the final report on where different ones went, you know. And
right.
I said, you need some help? He said, I wish you would, Anne. So I sat down there and typed that, and I kept a copy of it.
Uh-huh.
Just to say it was the last letter they ever wrote.
Oh, that is so neat. Oh, that's sad time.
Yeah, it was.
Now, were you ever married in your life?
Oh, yeah. I had married. My first husband was in the Marines. And I met him over at the base. Bill Carter. Bill. That's my daughter's father.
Okay.
And she was Bonnie Sue Carter, Bonnie was. And she gives all of her books to the library.
Right, I remember.
Bonnie Carter stuff.
I remember that.
Well, that's Bonnie. That's okay. My daughter.
Okay.
And so anyway, yeah, we were married, and it was a terrible marriage. I guess maybe I should have never got married, because when all my friends were getting married, I thought I had to get married too.
Uh-huh.
Well, we got married on May the 4th, 1951. In June, I was pregnant. So I had Bonnie the following March the 1st. She was born.
Uh-huh.
He got orders for Korea, and by the 1st of April, he had left and gone to the West Coast. But he had been very abusive to me.
Uh-huh.
He would smack me and make me sit in a chair like a child. Mother fixed this apartment up for us up in town.
Oh.
And I used to be right across the street from Virginia Jeffries and all. And I was always good friends with Virginia.
Uh-huh.
She went to our church. And I just looked up to her. She was somebody special.
So was that the apartment building that's still there now?
Yeah.
Right on the right side?
Yeah.
North?
Uh-huh. Where the...
Above, like Pearl, right.
Yeah. Virginia lived on one side, and her mother lived at the other apartment.
Okay. So there are two apartments up there.
And I would go over to Virginia's. Bill Carter would lay out the couch. I thought he was asleep. And so I'd go down the stairs and go over to Virginia's. I'd get over there, and Wesley would say, "Man, Bill Carter's up there to the window." He would be up to the window smoking, just coming out the window. I said, "Oh, my Lord." I said, "He don't want me to come over here for some reason." So I'd go home. He wanted to know where I'd been. I said, "I was over there." He said, "I don't want you over there." And I said, "Virginia, we've always been good friends. You're not going over there." And he said, "Sit in that chair." And he would sit me in the chair, and then he'd take my glasses off, and then he'd slap me in the face.
Oh, my.
And I'd do it. Let it really hit me. So anyway, this went on and on. You see, I was pregnant too at the time.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, when he got transferred, I was due back glad away. It was a relief for me.
Sure.
In a way, I hate to say that, but
I know.
But he made it okay. He went over to Korea, and he got back the next year in August.
Mm-hmm.
And he was transferred down to Beaufort, South Carolina, where Paris Island.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so we went down there, and we first went to his mother's. We got a new car, went to his mother's, and while we were there, he turned on me there, and they saw how he was.
Right.
He was going to blow my brains out all over some change that I could take it off the dresser to get Miley's milk at this little country store.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway... His sister, she said, "Ann, don't go with him to Paris. When you go home, stay home.
Uh-huh.
Let him go to Paris." But I didn't. I went with him. And it got just worse all the time. So it happened after Christmas, first part of January. I came home and I never went back. Because he had kicked me and I was bruised. My leg was bruised from my knee up to my thigh one time. Oh, because I yelled at Bonnie.
So you and Bonnie came back to the island.
Uh-huh. Okay. And we never went back. Cut back the taxi.
Uh-huh.
It was $159 from Beaufort, South Carolina to Chicopee. And then my father gave us a $10 tip.
Oh, my.
So, but I never went back.
So then what happened? So you kept working at the base then?
Yeah. Now, I got my job back to the base.
Okay.
Because, see, I had given it up.
Right.
And, I got back to work, and I worked from then until it closed.
Okay.
For 59.
Uh-huh.
So then it was four of us that went up to Dover at work. It was Keith Andrews.
Oh, yeah, remember him.
Keith and Raymond Merritt and this old maid over Pokeboat, Chris Ellis.
Okay.
The four of us drove to Dover.
Every day?
No. Yeah, we got rooms. I had got rooms with these two old maid sisters, and they were lovely. Lovely girls. My life. I thought they were so sweet. One was a wonderful Christian person. Mary. Mary Scott.
Uh-huh.
And they're from a nice family, Dover family. And Keith and Raymond lived down the street from me. Now, they got their meals where they stay, but we didn't have meals with Mary and Sarah. They'd have me for dinner once in a while. And Chris stayed somewhere else.
Okay.
But we'd have to go out and eat nights, you know.
And now, so what happened after that? So then you got married again?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But I waited 18 years to get married again.
Okay.
I had my mother. I had, of course, Bonnie and my daddy and my mother. And my mother was dying for 5 years. My father, he was dying about a year. I mean, I can't say he was really dying, but he lost his mind. I think today it would be Alzheimer's.
Okay.
But they refer to it as hardening of the arteries.
Right.
But I don't see a bit of difference.
Yep.
I don't see any difference.
Right.
Oh, my.
Right.
Oh, it was terrible.
That is such a...
Well, he was bed fast for the last 3 months or so. And I had to diaper him. And that was the hardest thing I think I ever had to do was when you put diapers on your father.
Yeah, but it gave you compassion for other people who were going through.
I learned a lot from that. I really did. I learned a lot from that.
Okay.
I wouldn't trade it because they were wonderful to me.
Right. It kind of sprung up the compassion in you that you have now.
Yeah.
You were
I worked with hospice at that hospital.
That's
and I think that's where I got it. I grew up. I really grew up. I really, it took me, I would say, in my 30s, I finally grew up. You know, I was still a lot of kid in it. But I knew what responsibility was then.
And your mom got down?
My mother, she couldn't walk. She lost the use of her legs. She was ever like rubber. She, well, between arthritis and Parkinson's.
Okay.
And the diabetes is what killed her.
Okay.
So, anyway, we went to church every Sunday. It was one of the men that went to church was Mr. Nick Nichols. He was married to one of the Winder ladies, Bruce. And they lived right near church. And he could see at me when I got out of the car Sunday mornings, getting Mother out and put her in a wheelchair, you know. She was heavy. She's like me. She's large. But I learned to tackle her. I mean, I knew how to get a hold of her and put her in the chair.
Right.
You know?
Without using your back.
And, yeah, I used my legs.
Right.
And I had varicose veins. But anyway, we would go to church every Sunday. And we went to church.
Where did you go to church at?
Oh, Methodist.
Yeah.
I've been there all my life.
Right. At the Methodist Church, Christ United Methodist Church on Church Street. All right.
And so my mother was a wonderful Christian. They didn't come to a better Bob. And she, anyway.
How old were you when you came to the Lord? Or did you always go your whole life?
I was young. I would say around 10 or 11, something like that.
Okay.
You know, I spoke of that in my speech. For that, I think.
Yeah, you want to tell that little story for the tape, too, if you don't mind?
I've got time.
Okay.
Anyway, we used to have two-week revivals at our church back then. We used to get these singers, and we had guest speakers, you know.
Right.
But I remember so well this singer that we had. He was a preacher over at New Church.
Uh-huh.
His name was Preacher Webb. And he could sing it. Oh, golly, he had the most beautiful voice. And he sang the Holy City. That was one of his favorites.
Uh-huh.
He would sing that, and that rafters at the church would just rattle, sing like, man, he was powerful. And we, our preacher at that time was Reverend Orster. He was a little tiny man and his wife. They were real short. And so, such a sweet little couple. And he was such a saintly little man. And he used to tell the story about the little engine that could, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he would mention that several times in the 3 or 4 years he was here and illustrate his sermons, you know. And he always sang, his favorite hymn was "In the Highways and Hedges, I'll Be Somewhere Working for My Lord." And he did that clear up until he died. But it was in one of these two-week revivals that we had that I went down that church aisle and went to the altar and gave my heart to God.
Oh, that's just...
And, but I can't always say, I mean, when you get teenagers and you get away to school and all, you do a lot of things, you know, you don't do.
Right.
But I never was real bad, though. I never did drink in my life. And, I always had good friends. I always had a lot of friends. Some of them were drinking friends. But they used to say to me, "And how do you stand this?" I said, "You're not bothering me." I said, "I don't need it." I said, "I have a good time at it." But anyway.
Now back to Nick Nichols.
Oh, Nick said one morning, he says he felt he didn't want to go to church for them. He said, but he looked at me, looked out the window, and he saw me struggling with Bob, getting her in a wheelchair. He got dressed right away and come to church. He said, I couldn't stand with you, and you were making that effort to get to church. So.
Now, how about your second husband?
Well, when my mother died, my father died in 1969. He was 64 years old.
Okay.
I got that reversed. He was 69 years old. He died in 1964.
Okay.
They were born 1895.
Wow.
So, when my mother died, she died in 1972 in February.
Uh-huh.
And I was working at the base at that time. It was with NASA. And the phone rang one day, and I hadn't been dating in quite 2 or 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And I was busy, you know, and the phone rang, and it was this voice. The Vic had a beautiful speaking voice, uh-huh. And he also sang. He had a beautiful bass voice. And he says, Anne? I said, yes. He says, this is Vic Davis over in Calibration. I said, yes. I said, you're Bruce's brother? I had seen him, you know, and he's real quiet and shy. He's the complete opposite of me.
But you always have a good listener.
So anyway, he said, I was wondering, are you going to be busy Friday night? And I thought to myself, oh, God, here's somebody got a job for me. And I says, well, I always get my hair done on Friday nights when I get home from work. He says, well, what time do you get home? I says, usually around 7 by the time I get finished. Oh, he says, that would be fine. He said, I would like to take you out to dinner. I said, oh. And he says, I know a nice Chinese restaurant up near Ocean City called the Golden Dragon.
Uh-huh.
And he says, could I come over and take you? I said, well, that would be real nice. He said, do you like Chinese food? I said, yes, I do. So we went out. And he was an old bachelor, 52 now.
Uh-huh.
I'm 41.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't dated. That all these, I mean, I dated, but it had been 18 years since I was married.
Uh-huh.
So, well, honey, we hit it right off. I mean, it was no, like, falling deeply in love or anything like that, but we just hit it off. Uh-huh. Very compatible.
Right.
We talked, and he liked music, and he liked classical music and all. His father led the choirs and the churches he was in.
Wow.
And the whole family was musical.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, he invited me, wanted to know if I like classical music. And I said, yes. I said, I like any kind of music. And he says, well, my sister and I have community concert tickets. And he says, we're having a concert next Friday at the UMES. He said, the Deanna Boys Choir will be there. And he said, I was wondering if you would like to go because Anna can't go. His sister was named Anna.
Uh-huh.
So we went to that. Well, but let me tell you this. I got so tickled. When we were having dinner that night, I looked over at Vic, and the perspiration just broke right out on his head. He was bald, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
He took his handkerchief and he wiped his head. He says, when I eat, he says, a lot of times he says, I'll break out in perspiration. I said, well, that's okay. And he says, Anne, I want to tell you something. He says, I don't believe I've ever enjoyed myself more than I have tonight. Well, when he said that, I felt like crying. I thought to myself, she was. I made him that happy. Bless his heart. So, from then on, I had me a ring, but that was March, 1st of March. And he gave me my diamond in May, and we were married in September.
How about it?
And when he got married, people in Pocomo video was like, because when the people that knew him, they said, I just can't believe, Anne, that you got married. Then he said, he's so quiet, though.
But that's a good match.
But we had a really good match.
Absolutely, that's good. How long were y'all married for?
8.5 years.
Okay.
I wasn't intended to be married very long, because none of my marriage lasted very long.
Uh-huh.
And then...
So he passed away then?
Yeah. And he died up in Pennsylvania. We were up to my son-in-law's, in-law's.
Uh-huh.
And his in-laws, his mother and dad's
okay.
up in Pennsylvania. Uh-huh. We were getting ready to come home. We'd been up there for over George Washington's birthday weekend.
Uh-huh.
And he fell dead in the, coming out of the bathroom.
Heart.
So that was a shock. So then about 6 years later, my first boss I ever had, Bill Gillespie, he was a civil engineer, and he was with the Navy. He came here with the Navy, which I didn't know him then. But I went to work over the public works when the Navy was there, and I worked for him. I was his secretary. And he was so good to me. I looked at him and his wife. He had the sweetest wife. Everybody loved her.
Uh-huh.
And so he gave me all kinds of advice, you know, because at that time Bill Carter was treating me terrible. And one day I broke down and cried.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted to know, hey, what's wrong with you? And I told him, I said, Bill Carter beat me last night. So he said, come out here. So he took me out in the back of the building and talked to me, you know, and he says, look, you shouldn't have to go through that. He says, now, I know Dionysopoulos, that was the, he was a Greek, his commanding officer, the Marine Corps officer there. He says, and I'll go have a talk with him. I says, oh, my goodness, Mr. Gillespie, don't do that. I said, because I really would get it. But anyway, he was like a father figure to me at all. But of course, he was my boss.
Uh-huh.
And, he lost his wife. She died. That was in 87. Yeah. And so about three weeks later or so, I was out cutting grass in the backyard.
Uh-huh.
Hot as blazes. And I looked up and I saw this gray-haired man coming out. I said, who in the world is that? Well, it was Bill. He said, Ann, for goodness sakes, cut that motor off and get in the house. He says, hot as it is, you're going to have a stroke. Well, anyway, he come over to ask me if I would do a favor for him, write a letter to the paper, you know, and thanking people for being so nice to him when Trevi was sick at that time of her death. And I said, I'll be glad to. So I did that and took it over to him. And left it. He wasn't home when I took it over. And so he wanted to do something for me for doing it. He wanted to take me out to dinner.
Uh-huh.
So we went out to dinner. Well, I talked about Bill, I mean, about Vic, and he talked about Trevi. And we just talked all night long about the two of them. And I was telling him, I says, Bill, I says, you got to be careful this day and time, because women are terrible. I says, they'll call you up, and I said, they'll chase after you and all, because I said, they don't care.
Uh-huh.
I said, anymore. Uh-huh. They don't let the man talk. Then he says, well, I've not been rushed yet. I said, you just wait. Well, honey. He started calling me, wanting me to go to dinner and all. I told Bonnie, I says, Trevi's not been dead that long, Bonnie. I says, people think I'm terrible.
Uh-huh.
I says, she said, but Mom, he acts like he's so lonesome. He said, when he talked to me, when Bonnie came down and stayed a few days with him, and he called one day when she was here, and he talked with her. I said, well, Bill, I said, Bill always was a nice person. I think the world of him. I said, we've been friends. My Lord, Trevi, I loved her to death. So anyway, well, we started going out to eat and all, and all. Well, the next thing you know, he wanted to get married. And I said, no, we're not getting married. And I says, you're going to have to wait. And I said, you don't realize it, but you're still in a grieving process. So I said, so you don't really believe it. Realize it. I said,
right.
You are.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, I tried to give him away one time. I said to him, Bill, I want you to meet this friend of mine. I said, she's living up here with her sister, and I said, she's from North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
I said, she's even got a nice little southern voice, not quite as sweet as Trevi's,
uh-huh.
but she is nice. He says, Ann, I don't mean no harm to this, but he says, I want to do my own choosing and picking.
Uh-huh.
I told Bonnie that. She says, well, Mom, I really think Mr. Gillespie thinks the world of you.
Uh-huh.
Well, it turned out that way, and we were so happy.
That's
we were married.
Sweet.
We were married. in June of 1988.
Uh-huh.
And Ann, we went everywhere. We did a lot of traveling in that time, and so happy. We used to play rook with a rook club, the Highlands and all over at New Church.
Uh-huh.
And we did that on Friday nights, you know, and we were always meeting different ones at the restaurant, you know.
Uh-huh.
I was really happy. Really happy. I thought myself, I can't believe this. And yet he was so much older than me.
He's
18 years older than I.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it, though. I didn't see no difference.
Yeah.
So, and I was so happy. And in December, he started getting sick. Had this bad cold coming in.
Okay.
And he got pneumonia more or less.
What year?
That was in 88. And by Christmas, he was getting over it. He was doing pretty good.
Uh-huh.
And then, first part of the year, it was the 11th of January, he had been down and had a barium enema down at the hospital, and they had found a polyp in his colon, and it turned out it was malignant. And we went down and they did this barium enema, and we came home and he started hemorrhaging.
Uh-huh.
They did a biopsy, and he never got out of the hospital. We had to rush him to the hospital, and he lived from the 11th till the 2nd.
So how long were you with him?
We were only about 8 months.
Oh, but they were good 8 months, though.
Yeah, very happy.
You know, your whole, most of your life.
Yeah, I've known him about 35 years.
That's good. Well, that's all been very interesting. I'm coming to the end of the tape. I'll have to come back again, because I feel like I'm really touched, because weren't you in town council and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, there's so many days of Chicken Dick I still haven't covered yet, so I just thank you so much. This has been very interesting, very fun, very good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right.
Mm-hmm.